Our tech guru Jesse Filer is fresh from the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference and will share what he can about what was disclosed and hint at what he can't, and tell a lot of good stories in the process on the roundtable this morning. Jesse provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. He is the author of a number of books on FileMaker and Mac OS X, as well as on new technologies such as Mashups, Facebook, and Bento, which is why he gets invited to such developers' conferences. Jesse, it is wonderful to have you with us. Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
And again, you can find out more information by going to northcountryconsulting.com about all things Jesse and about much of what we're going to talk about this morning. So give us a sense of, this is a worldwide developers conference. This happens how many times? How often do they do this? Yearly?
Once a year.
Okay. And for you, what do you get out of it?
Well, I think for anyone, it's what we get out of it, it's about 5,000 developers all together in one place. This year, things have changed since the old days. The conference sold out in about less than 2 hours, which is a little bit difficult. But you have the developers, you have quite a few people from Apple, engineers from Apple. So there are sessions where they'll talk about new things, how to do things. Some of them are how to do old things, you know, that, you know, developers need to focus on again. New features. There are quite a few labs where you can sit down and talk with Apple engineers and bring in your code and say, you know, this is what I've done. How do I get out of it?
Yeah.
Or one case that actually happened to me a few years ago, I said, this is what I've done, and I don't know why it works, but why is it working? And the answer was, we don't know why it's working, but you should probably change it. So it's that's and a lot of interactions with other developers.
So do you consider yourself, I mean, you write about this stuff, you write books about it, but that isn't you consider yourself a developer?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I have three hats.
Yeah.
Because I write about the technologies. I use the technologies as a developer. And then I also am a general sort of consultant, often focusing on databases.
Okay.
So a lot of us do several aspects of this. And as you said, the conference is under non-disclosure, so we can't really talk about that. But I can – things that are not under non-disclosure are some of the extra things that happen at the conference. So, for example, can I give you a piece of just – this will shock you.
Yeah.
I spent some time talking with a friend of mine who I've known for a number of years, who also is a developer and an author of technical books. And now I can blow the lid off of this and say, do you want to know what author developers talk about at tech conference?
What is that?
Editors and publishers. By name.
Yeah, I would think that would come up.
So, you know, that sort of thing happens there.
A little bit of a clearinghouse of being able to, well, talk about people and get some things off your chest, perhaps.
Yes, networking.
Yeah.
I think that's the term for it now.
Yeah.
Comparing notes. It's a good way to stay in touch. A lot of things happen online, but there are also things that are perfect when you're all there together.
Before we talk about some of the things that of what went on and so forth, but I think it's interesting that it's all non-disclosure, and of course this is to protect people. So, you know, I don't take your idea, you don't take my idea, that kind of thing, right?
Well, yeah. Except, although what's interesting is among the developers, there's not totally obviously, but there's a great deal of sharing of what people are working on. But it's developers at Apple and with other major technology companies, developers see products before they are announced. So that what happens, and this is true of Apple, Microsoft, Google, anyone, when a new product is announced, often it is announced when it's ready to ship. You can go out and buy the new whatever. And not only can you buy the new whatever, but on the day that it's shipping, you can also get new software for it. And that doesn't happen by magic. That happens because the developers have prototypes, developer previews, and so forth, so that we can work on it, so that when it all happens miraculously at midnight on the day when it launches,
right,
everything is there.
So, for example, and this hasn't happened yet, but Apple says, okay, we're ready to go with iPhone 5.
And they haven't said that.
They have not said that, right. They have not, and many thought they would, but they haven't said that yet. Okay, so, but the developers have to be ready to go with the apps that will go with iPhone 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they announce, okay, we're ready to go with iPhone 5, then the developers will be ready as well.
Yeah. What Apple did announce is that there is a new operating system for mobile devices, which will be called iOS 6.
Yeah.
And they have not announced what everyone speculates, which is that iOS 6 will launch with a new iPhone.
Mm.
The fact that every new version of iOS has launched with a new iPhone is immaterial. But they have announced sometime this fall iOS 6 will ship, and the developers got a preview of it at the conference. That's all public.
Let's talk a little bit about apps.
Mm-hmm.
They gave some ideas of what they thought made great apps, and then they gave out awards for designs.
And this is actually, despite the fact that the conference is under nondisclosure, certain things are public. Like the keynote is public, and it's been widely reported. What happens in the rest of the conference is, I don't think I could describe it as arcane. What goes about 40 times beyond arcane?
Yes, okay.
But there are things that are visible, and one of the things that's visible is the Apple Design Awards, which are given every year. And Apple picks some apps that they think are great achievements. These are not the most successful apps. They're not the sales leaders in the App Store. But there are apps that Apple thinks should be noted. And you can get to them. There's a link on my website to the Design Awards.
Right.
You can also find them on Wikipedia for this year and last year. And you can see what Apple treasures, what they are encouraging people to do. And for anyone who's interested in apps, who wants to start writing apps, you can see here, these are the things that are more than best practices. They're award-winning practices. Mm. And it's very interesting to look at the apps. They're in four categories, iPad, iPhone, Mac, and students. And if for each one, they give a demonstration of it and a description of it, a link to where you can buy it and to the website. And what you see is a whole bunch of very interesting things. Obviously, Apple is picking apps that are demonstrating features that they like in the operating systems. Mm. There's no question about that. Also, some of the more recent ones are shown there. In the awards of the 11 that were given out, there were two major companies that would not surprise you. One app, it was noticed it was a collaboration between two people. Many of them are smaller companies. Some are focusing on apps, not just on iOS, but also Android. But what they have in common is an attention to detail. There's no question about that. Use of some of the new features. And again, all of this is linked from the website. And there were two apps in one category that I found very interesting. And can I?
Oh, please.
The first app that they announced, the first award that they announced, was an app called Little Star.
All right. Little Star.
This is in the student category.
Okay.
And I'm reading here, so forgive me. Little Star is a 30-page interactive children's book with beautiful illustrations and original artwork. It's the story of five friends on their journey to catch stars. This is the part that is of interest to developers. It's a great example of the results students can produce on iOS, built on UIKit, uses Game Center, Core Animation, Core Audio, Multitouch, and the accelerometer.
Ooh, this is accelerometer.
Not consumer speak.
No. Although I wish accelerometer was used more in our everyday vernacular, but okay.
But the point here is they're saying this is an app that's important, and these are the features that the developers have used that help make it important, and I'll in the student category, and I'll give away where it was built.
Yes.
It's available on the iPad in English, Mandarin, and Cantonese.
Hmm.
It was designed by a group of students at Dalian Nationalities University in China. and although this isn't on the website, at the conference they said it was a collaboration between the art and the computer science departments.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's a really, interesting app. But it wasn't the only student app. And I don't know how many students and teachers listen to the roundtable right now, but this might be something...
More this week than last week. Yeah.
This might be something for people to think about.
Yes.
It's called DaVinci, DaWindci. And it's an app, it's sort of a game, but it's also educational. The borderline between games and educational apps is blurring dramatically, particularly in the award winners. And this is a game you see a three-dimensional view of a European city, sort of medieval, with towers and bridges and so forth. And there's a hot air balloon floating over the city. And it uses multi-touch gestures, that's the things where you swipe back and forth, to paint wind, hurricanes, and lightning, which move the balloon around. So you're moving the balloon by drawing wind patterns. It's quite interesting. And this is another one where the physics of the app, they've spent a lot of time on, so that it, even though it's imaginary, it's animation and so forth, it is accurate.
Wow.
And that's quite good. And this was also a student project. It was created by a group of students as a 3D project for Media Design High School of Applied Sciences in Munich. So these are what high school students and college students can do.
What are we talking about in cost?
That's interesting. When I went to the keynote, and they started lining up for the keynote at 5, actually the day before.
Did you camp out, did you?
I did not camp out, but because of the time difference, I went to bed Sunday night at 8 o'clock mm-hmm. in the evening, San Francisco time, and I couldn't keep my eyes open, which meant that at 4 in the morning I got up wide awake.
You're ready to go. Sure.
And I got in line at 6:30. And you could see there were two types of people in the line, which went almost all the way around the block. There were people from the West Coast at 6:30 in the morning who were staggering around. And then there were those of us from the East Coast, Europe, and Asia who were wide awake because... But a bunch of us in line got into a discussion about what to charge for building an app.
Mm.
And the discussion basically was, what happens when someone comes to you and says, I have a great idea for an app. I need someone to write the code for it. How about you? And the general feeling was, well, if the conversation goes on and says, you know, I'll give you 10% of the profits for writing the code, there seemed to be a great deal of lack of enthusiasm for that. Then we started talking about, for a generic app, I mean, you can't do such a thing. You have to know more about it. What would be the number that you would give to someone who says, how much would you charge to build an app?
Hmm.
And it was me, someone from Seattle, someone from San Diego, and someone from Silicon Valley. And we all guessed, and we all hit the same general vicinity, which was $20,000
to $30,000. Okay.
Which is, and whether that's high or low, people don't know because every app is different. We know some high-profile apps like the Obama app in the last election was reported to have cost $200,000, and by now it's way more over that.
Mm.
Many, many apps, and some of them we saw at Developers Conference, were people building their own apps because they have a job or they don't have a job or something. They want to do something to learn it or to build something. They have the skills for it. So they build something without being paid for it, and they get some payback. Most apps do not make a great deal of money, but some do. So there are also many reasons, as with anything else, in not just in technology, building apps so there's something out there, and you say, this is what I do. Then you can move on from that to the paid community. And because the world of apps is so new, you know, that's what everyone is doing. Everyone is building their portfolios. So it seemed we all thought that when you were in the $20,000 to $30,000 range, it sort of makes sense. It seems reasonable. And, you know, if you say $1 million, people are going to say you're nuts, even though that may be valid for certain things. And for other apps, it may be depending on what it is, it's going to cost something different.
And I would think it would depend on the time that it would take you, the developer, right? Of how long it takes to develop.
It depends. And if you look at the design awards, which is how we sort of got onto this, if you look at the things that are high, that make an app highly rated, like the design of the interface, little things like animations as buttons appear and disappear, that once you've done it, it's not really very complicated to do, but it makes the difference between an app that looks right, whatever that is, and something that just looks slapped together.
You mentioned a moment ago of when you went to the awards of the top developers were two major companies that you would not be surprised by, and those two companies are Disney and
National Geographic.
Yeah.
One of the award winners is something called National Parks by National Geographic, which is exactly what you would expect. And their archive is incredible.
It's breathtaking.
Yeah.
This stuff is just incredible. And for Disney, I again assume that it has a lot to do with that blend of education and game.
Actually, it is. There's something called Where's My Water? And Disney invented a wonderful character named Swampy, a crocodile who lives in sewers beneath the city.
Who's very cute, by the way. He brought Swampy here with him.
Yeah, he's incredibly cute. And the fact that Disney has managed to create a lovable animated character that's really breathtaking news, isn't it? I mean, they've done it for years. They know how to do it. But Swampy wants to take a shower, and there's a water at the top, and you can dig with your finger. You just draw a path for the water to flow into the shower, and it gets progressively more difficult. It sounds silly, but one of the things that they worked on, and there are interviews linked from the website with some of the people there, and they said one of the most complicated things that they did on this app was animating the flow of the water to get the physics of the water flow right, which is, it's interesting. It's not just slapping together some blue stuff that moves. It's creating the animated illusion of water flowing.
Hmm.
And that's where, in so many of these apps that are awarded, get these awards, it's this mixture of education and detailed content that's what's addictive.
I was surprised, we only have about a minute and a half left, but I was surprised when you said that apps generally, some do, but generally don't make money. And I guess if you look at all of them that are out there, in general, they don't. But boy, some of them.
Some make a lot of money.
Become a part of our life.
Yeah. And apps are changing now. Apps are becoming a new media, really. A lot of apps make no money. Some are very expensive. For instance, I would venture to say that, I won't name it, any bank that has an online banking app, my guess is it makes no money. They give it away, makes no money, but it is a cost of doing business today.
Yeah, so,
and there are a lot of apps like that. They have to be there. They have to be given away. There are also apps that are built for much less money. They're built as websites that appear on mobile devices with a lot of app-like features. And then there are also apps, and you see several of them in the Design Awards, that are free, but they have the ability inside the app for you to purchase things. For instance, in the National Geographic National Park Guide, it's free, but from within it, you can purchase guides to specific parks. So the economic structure is taking shape even as we speak, but it's becoming clearer of where the opportunities are and why people are doing this.
And again, we're out of time, but when you come back from a conference like this, do you come back sort of refreshed and say, okay, I'm ready to take on the world, or you just come back and go, oh my God, there's so much out there? Or a little bit of both?
No, you come back with a great deal of dirty laundry and a few new T-shirts and some ideas.
You know, that was the one thing everyone, when I told people you were coming on to talk about the conference, everybody said the same question. But I wonder what kind of swag you got from that. So T-shirts?
T-shirts, I got a case for an iPhone that I don't like, so I can give it away.
Jesse Feiler, as he mentioned, provides all this information on his website. It's northcountryconsulting.com, northcountryconsulting.com, and you can check it out there. Jesse Feiler provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits, and it's always a pleasure to have him here. Jesse, thank you very much, as always.
Take care.
Appreciate it.